Chapter 4.
Settle down, settle down, pupils. Our topic for today is the observer effect. Hailing from the field of quantum physics, it's a theory wherein the mere observation of a phenomenon inevitably changes that phenomenon. Okay, I admit I lifted that directly from Wikipedia. The most common example has something to do with light and wave particles and blah blah blah, but since most of us aren't physicists, here's some more relatable examples. Have you ever had to check the pressure of your car or bike tires? When you do, you unintentionally release some of that air, which changes the pressure and affects your measurement. Or think about how contestants on Bachelor in Paradise behave while the cameras are rolling. Now, they'd never do all of that if they weren't being watched by millions of people. Observer Effect is also an excellent bottle episode of Star Trek Enterprise, just kind of as an aside. And even if they weren't looking for love on a tropical island, the residents of Connor Creek were certainly under observation. As we interviewed them, they knew we were recording every word, so it undoubtedly affected their behavior. With all of this in mind, we knew we couldn't entirely trust what anyone said to us. But we could try to figure out why they were saying it. Even under normal circumstances, this is a Herculean task. But with the substantial pressure building up in Connor Creek around the upcoming election, our job was even more challenging. We were using every skill we had to try to check the pressure bit by bit, or risk it all bursting out of the tire, causing a blowout while going 90 on a highway to hell. We couldn't afford to license AC/DC, so the Wayward Guide theme will have to do. Hello, I'm the all-knowing, all-powerful Paul Shuhorn.
And I'm Artemis Shuhorn.
Pay no attention to the sister behind the curtain. Welcome to episode 4 of...
The Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye.
Twin tuition!
You owe me a drink.
I'll take a tequila sunrise.
Neat. I knew we weren't identical. So, remind me why you brought up the observer effect?
Because our very presence in Connor Creek was changing the story we were investigating, even as we were investigating it.
A journalist can never fully be just a fly on the wall.
Oh, now that would be so cool, to be a fly, played by Jeff Goldblum.
But in all seriousness, we most definitely caused a bigger splash in Connor Creek than we intended.
We attempted to gracefully dive into the deep end, but ended up doing a big messy cannonball.
As we touched on in the previous episode, Paul and I got in a bit of a fight at Minor Mole. It's not uncommon. We're both very, passionate about putting out the best product we can.
I felt underappreciated, so I decided to get some clarity with a tarot reading from Prism, who we'd interviewed the day before. I guess you'd call her the town's mystic?
Your presence here was foretold. But your equipment, not so much. I must ask you to park your microphone in the umbrella stand. I don't permit technology in my inner sanctuary during a reading. The beeps and bops and poops interfere with the energy.
Poops?
I don't think that's a thing.
What if we buy something?
I don't know. Mercury's in retrograde. Not anymore. That'll be fine.
Great. Whoa, that is a super strong vibe you got going on in there. I don't mind it, though. Hey, Artie, doesn't this kind of smell like Mima's poker den?
That's Paolo Santo, essence with myrrh. I make it myself. It's quite popular. Only $9.95 USD. But let me learn a little more about you before you peruse our selection. To the cards.
I could tell she was in the anti-Minor Mole camp. Dark clouds, evil spirits. But beyond that, she was hard to read.
Exactly. I felt that she could be concealing something, which is why I decided to go back. Plus, I had a lead I was chasing.
Werewolves?
Remember that book we found at Aubrey's with the missing pages about werewolves? Well, Prism seemed like someone who had a connection to the paranormal.
Or at least pretended to have a connection.
Anywho, while I was at Prism's crystal and tea shop getting my cards read, we were both attacked. I escaped with only a few scratches. I was lucky, but Prism wasn't.
Prism was murdered.
Coincidentally, right after Silas made some thinly veiled threats to us. Well, to you.
There are no coincidences, so it begged the questions. How was Silas involved? Was Prism's killer the same as Ryan's?
And would Prism have been attacked if I hadn't gone to see her?
That wasn't a call we could make. But you couldn't deny that this all started the night we arrived.
We were becoming a part of our own story.
The observer effect strikes again. Did you get a glimpse of who attacked you?
I wish I could say I did, but they, or it, came from behind me. It was weird. Prism noticed something, and this look of horror just overcame her. I turned to see, and bam, blackness. I was knocked right out. The next thing I knew, it was the following morning, and I was waking up at the Dead Canary.
As soon as I got Dr. Henry's voicemail, I bolted over. Beyond the news that you were still alive and being transferred back to the Dead Canary, Madison wouldn't tell me much. But I caught a glimpse inside. Prism's body was still there, draped in shawls, soaked in streaks of blood that glistened in the moonlight. Her injuries were not unlike the ones that Ryan had sustained. An animal wouldn't sneak into a room and only target one person. This was a premeditated attack by a human.
A human with the strength of a beast, perhaps?
I'll never be your beast of burden. Oh, my back is broad, but it's a hurting. Oh.
Our boss, Leslie.
Hey, Artemis. I didn't realize you'd picked up. right. Voicemail. Just calling to check in. These notes are good. We can definitely work with these. If I had to give you one piece of advice, it would be, you know, to keep doing exactly what you're doing. You know what I mean? Don't veer off, stray, wander from this path, all right? I am so proud of you. And, Paul, right? Hey, your first big story. Pressure's on. Not only to raise the bar from an already successful season of Wayward Guide, but to, you know, uphold APN's high standards of journalistic, integrity as well, all right? I mean, that is equally as important. Heck, it's more important. And boy, am I counting on you, huh? I mean, it's a good thing there's two of you to pick up each other's slack. Ooh. Hey, you know what? I just had a great idea. Maybe I could be in the podcast. You know, somewhere, anywhere, as sort of a mentor figure or something. But I'd have to have a different name. Rebecca, help me move around the letters of my name to create an alias.
While we're on the subject of journalistic integrity, let's go back to the observer effect. By merely doing what we do as journalists, we know we're going to affect the outcome. There's no way around it. So we all strive to be conscious of our observation, acknowledge our biases, and minimize our impact.
But it's impossible to be truly impartial. We're all just human beings.
Yes, it's a standard that we don't always meet. Sometimes you can passively affect things unintentionally, and sometimes you blow right past the observer effect altogether and just start actively affecting things.
Abandoning the tenets of journalistic integrity altogether.
While Paul was recuperating from his eventful night, I headed over to a town council meeting where I would do just that. Even with two major deaths in less than 48 hours, there was still an important election the following day, and I wanted to get a closer look at how the council functioned. Not to mention, Truman Hensley would be there, the now unopposed candidate for the town council seat.
Huh. I feel like I don't know a lot about Truman. Do you happen to have a relevant clip we could listen to that would give us some backstory?
I thought you'd never ask.
When one small town's economy went belly up in the recession, Truman moved mountains to find money in the private sector so they could get back on their feet.
My life was ruined. Then God sent Truman.
She's a politician that actually gets things done.
If it weren't illegal, I would have voted for her twice.
15 years of experience in civil service speaks for itself. Think tactfully. Think Truman.
Terrible slogan. Truman was a semi-recent transplant to Connor Creek. Fairly private, but we used APN's most up-to-date research tools to do some digging.
He's talking about Google.
Her political aspirations began in a small town northeast of San Diego, where she took several minor local government jobs until ultimately becoming chief of staff to the mayor.
We reached out to the mayor's office for comment, but they informed us he has since passed away. In the following decade, she relocated often, never remaining in one town for longer than a year or two after gaining political experience. She then moved to Connor Creek, the fall before her candidacy for town council. Based on the voting records we've obtained, her political allegiances have always favored the fossil fuel industry and free market growth.
Those political leanings lined up with what little information we could gather on the history of her family. Her maternal grandfather owned a mining company called Mine Your Own Business. I tracked down permits and contracts, which indicated he was less a large-scale operation and more a glorified prospector. Her father also had a role in the mining industry as a policymaker for the Department of the Interior. While you were with Prism, I called Truman's campaign office to see if I could find out more.
Truman campaign office. Riley Kirkland speaking.
Oh, hi. This is Artemis Shuhorn. I was wondering if I could schedule a time to sit down with Miss Hensley.
Huh. Hold. I've got the news gal on the horn for you. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Artemis. Sure. One sec, Missy.
Most politicians insulate themselves from nosy reporters with gatekeepers and busy schedules, so I was pleasantly surprised when Truman picked up the phone, full of eager warmth, ready for a candid conversation.
Good evening, Miss Shuhorn. How can I help you?
Oh, hello. Well, I'm here from L.A. doing a story on the
Connor Creek election. Yes, I know exactly who you are. Funny that a couple of journalists from the big city would find our minor election newsworthy. Not that all our constituents work in the mines, but they could.
I see you share my brother's sense of humor.
And how are the two of you settling in?
Well, not well, actually. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions, Miss Hensley?
Of course. Always thrilled to take some time and shed light on the truth. And please, call me Truman.
Okay. So Truman, I was curious about your campaign. You seem to have built quite a following in a relatively short amount of time.
Why, yes, I have. Did you have a question about that?
My question is, what motivated you to run for office in a quaint town like Connor Creek?
Well, I was born in a small town. In my professional life, I've had to move around a lot, but I've always dreamed of having roots in a place just like this one. But I bet you already knew that from, you know, your research. Truthfully, I think it's beautiful how government can function in a small town like this without all the unnecessary bureaucracy. And filling that town council seat with a candidate like me, I promise it will function beautifully.
She went on to explain that Minor Mole had been eyeing the Connor Creek mines for over a year, and that the town council had been in a gridlock approving the permits. Months later, half of the council was still itching to approve them and the other half citing existing restrictions to prevent it. Minor Mole was no closer to getting their drilling approved than when the debate began. It was a stalemate. So the council decided to hold a special election to fill a long vacant seat, which would cast the deciding vote.
Which explains why Silas was so pissed. Opening up an office here only to be cock-blocked by some permits?
Yeah, but I have a feeling he's always like that.
No matter where you stand, the lack of resolution is clearly aggravating the town. I'm sure everyone will be relieved to outlive this election. And what happened to Ryan was certainly tragic. But we must move forward for the sake of Connor Creek.
Truman felt that she was the person to motivate the town to utilize its untapped potential. And she had a point. Her experience and history made her an attractive candidate. Also, unlike Silas, she really seemed to care about the future of Connor Creek. Truman was building on her family's pro-mining legacy and certainly didn't mind leveraging her story to put on a show.
My father and grandfather understood the role industry could play in breathing new life into a community.
Mining is a lifestyle that's never going out of style.
I've worked with Truman's family for over 50 years. They're nothing if not trustworthy.
Truman understands that creating a thriving economy is about more than just the immediate results. It's about creating a better life for our children, and their children, and their children, and their children.
Enterprise brings more than wealth to a community. It makes a community a family. As your new town council member, I promise to pass the motion to begin drilling. Because as a family, we'll never settle for just the silver beneath our feet. Let's dig deeper. Let's reach higher. Let's move forward together.
This ad is paid for by Truman for Connor Creek.
Truman for Connor Creek. TFCC. Remember that note I found on Silas's desk about the wire? Minor Mole seemed to be funding the Truman campaign to sway the vote in their favor. Would following the money shed more light on the recent murders?
I mean, it would make sense. Truman and Minor Mole share a similar goal. Expand mining in Connor Creek. And then world domination.
You're joking, but after talking to these people, it seemed foolish to doubt their ambition, especially after making the connection between Minor Mole and Truman. My initial interview with Ms. Hensley was informative, but I knew I needed FaceTime if I wanted real answers. Which brings us back to my little disaster at the town council meeting.
This meeting will be called to order in 3 minutes.
There were only a couple items of business that day, and it became quickly apparent that the meeting was called as a final campaign push for Truman. Then Madison showed up. As Truman addressed the small gathering, she acted like she had already won the election.
I mean, she essentially had. She was running unopposed now that Ryan was, well, you know.
I could tell Madison was really struggling to hold it together. I saw the color draining from her face as Truman's speech grew more and more impassioned. And that's when I had my moment. In a completely unprofessional move, which I'm embarrassed to admit and tried very hard to cut from this podcast, I stood up and nominated Madison to run in her brother's stead for the vacant town council seat.
Insane. And absolutely uncuttable. Why'd you do it?
I don't know what came over me. It just seemed completely unfair that Truman wasn't facing any opposition when half the town still supported Ryan's platform. And after I connected the dots between her and the funds from Minor Mole, I just thought the other side could use a little nudge to level the playing field.
You know, that's what I love about you, Artie. Your extraordinary sense of journalistic integrity can still be overtaken by your even more extraordinary sense of justice. How did she respond?
Madison agreed to run, the meeting ended, and just like that, the Reynolds campaign was resurrected. I managed to catch Truman on the way out, but she was not pleased to see me.
Excuse me, Truman, I just wanted to-
Mr. Horn, a line has been crossed. I will not be so eager to assist you in the future.
Are you receiving campaign funds from Silas Torson?
Let me give you a little bit of advice. You're an outsider here, playing with our lives like it's some kind of game. But your actions have genuine consequences for my constituents. After I win tomorrow, there will be no more story. So you and your brother are welcome to leave Connor Creek before you disrupt our peaceful little town any further.
Well, what did you expect? I mean, she had a clean shot at the council and you put someone in her way.
If Minor Mole was throwing around that much money and using Truman as a proxy, how deep did their control of the town run?
Well, Ryan did say his findings were just the tip of the iceberg.
Despite our best intentions, our observation of Connor Creek was making the town more dangerous with each passing hour.
The observer effect was in our rear view. There was no going back. To echo Truman,
we must move forward for the sake of Connor Creek.
Next time on Wayward Guide.
One more minute to complete your voter registration cards.
For marital status, are we putting current status or, like, ideal status? I don't want to close myself off to potential partners. I'm just going to fill out 2 cards. Cool?
Tin Can Brothers presents Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye, starring
Mary-Kate Wiles
and
Steve Zaragoza.
Written and directed by Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal. Featuring
Amrita Dhaliwal,
Clark Backstresser,
Jane Leach,
Bob Richter,
Denise Richter,
Tara Perry,
Cassie Silva,
Lindsay Etheridge,
Ed Powell,
Liz Saran,
Andrew James Holmes,
John Cozart,
and
Sean Astin.
Original theme music, sound design, and mixing by Ears Up Sound Design. Executive producers Corey Lubowich, Joey Richter, and Brian Rosenthal. Paul Komorowski, and Greg Gibbons, and April Morris. Go beyond the podcast and watch new episodes of the Wayward Guide Companion series on YouTube. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information, visit waywardguideshow.com or follow Tin Can Bros on Instagram and Twitter.